America.
And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and the rest of the continent this Friday, September 1st, 2023. The French medical charity is calling on aid agencies to help families fleeing the conflict in Sudan.
These are some of the areas that we are pushing so that food also, because if people are lacking food, then the malnutrition rates will go further and further, and, you know, mortalities will continue to grow high.
And Nigeria has joined a growing number of nations criticizing the latest coup in Gabon.
The rule of law and a faithful recourse to constitutional resolutions and instruments of electoral dispute resolution must not at any time be allowed to perish from our great continent.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The French medical charity Doctors Without Borders, also known by its French acronym MSF, reports that thousands of individuals escaping the conflict in Sudan are arriving in South Sudan in a deteriorating health conditions. Kennedy Olela, deputy head of operations for MSF, emphasizes the pressing need for additional humanitarian organizations to step in and offer vital services such as food, shelter and sanitation to the returnees in South Sudan's Upper Nile state. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
We are running activities in South Sudan, Upper Nile state. This is actually the state where, you know, people are crossing from Sudan since the beginning of the conflict in April. The main entry point is Rank, but of course Rank is a reception center where people arrive to be registered into South Sudan. As you know, most of this population, there were people living in Khartoum, originally from South Sudan. So because of the conflict, they are moving back into Sudan. So we are running activities in Malakal, Bulukot Transit Center, where MSF is conducting medical services for the population fleeing the conflict.
Yes, and how many? I've seen estimates around 1,000 people arrive a day. What are the numbers you're working with? How many people are you receiving?
The number is quite erratic because people are arriving on a daily basis. So since last week, actually, the number is that we are working with is around 10 to 15,000 people that are on transit. You know, every time people are getting into transit center, the IOM and the other organization are working on transporting them back to the original counties. So
I see.
It's a number that is erratic. It's not a constant figure, but between, you know, 10 to 15,000 people coming in all the time.
In transit. And MSF has reported a significant rise in measles and malnutrition cases among the displaced population there. What are the primary challenges your medical teams are facing when it comes to addressing these health issues?
One of the challenges that the team is facing is, you know, people are coming in very bad, very poor health conditions, coming very late. So, you know, working around the clock to ensure that these people are stabilized and supported to get a better health, you know, situation as they arrive. But they're arriving in very poor condition, poor health condition. So one of the challenges is that there is quite a number of people coming in. The workload is really, really high for the team. MSF is basically the only medical organization that is offering medical services in Bulukot transit site. So the pressure is really high on the team. The workload is high, and lack of, you know, other organizations who could come in and support MSF. So it's a bit dire situation, and this has made MSF to increase, you know, the bed capacity from 70 to around 121 to be able to cater for the influx of the patients coming in.
I see. And also a complicating factor that you mentioned in your press statement is the rainy season. And then conditions at the transit center are really dire, and people need sanitation, shelter, you know, and other things. And but let me ask you this final question. What specific actions and resources do you urgently require from humanitarian organizations to improve the medical and humanitarian response for people arriving from Sudan to South Sudan?
You know, as the rainy season started, there's possibility that there will be outbreak of waterborne diseases. There will be malaria. There will be malnutrition. There's measles already. So the resources that are required from the rest of the organization to step up so that these areas of, you know, having proper shelter, having food, you know, ensuring that, you know, cholera is might come because of rainy season, malaria as well. So distribution of mosquito net, having proper, you know, wash activities that could have a prevention. So we are advocating for more organizations to come in for basically prevention of, you know, the bomb that we are sitting on, because, you know, as the rain starts, cholera is one of the diseases that will probably come in because of poor sanitation, poor drinking water, you know. So these are some of the areas that we are pushing, so that food also, because if people are lacking food, then the malnutrition rates will go further and further, and, you know, mortalities will continue to grow high.
That's Kennedy Olela, Deputy Head of Operations at MSF. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, this past hour. Doctors Without Borders has called on international community to help prevent what they call a catastrophic humanitarian disaster in Chad, as the number of refugees arriving from neighboring Sudan overwhelms aid groups' ability to cope in. In this report from Adre, Chad, Henry Wilkins meets those suffering from malnutrition after fleeing Sudan.
In recent months, South Sudan has received hundreds of thousands of the displaced, mostly returnees of South Sudanese origin, who pass through the town of Renk on the Sudan border here. One, Yana Liwa, said she fled the country with no possessions. She says she fled with nothing in hand, unable to take anything from her home. She says she was living in a makeshift tent, so when the bombs started to fall on her compound, she fled with her family as fast as she could. As thousands continue to arrive in South Sudan every week, Egypt, on Sudan's northern border, has effectively stopped refugees from entering the country. Initially, it allowed around 250,000 to cross its border, but a new rule in June required Sudanese to obtain a visa to enter. Rights groups say this violates international standards, and onerous wait times for visas endanger those trying to flee. Abdullahi Halake is with Refugees International.
Egypt is also experiencing serious economic crisis, and as a result, it is very, very careful in the number of people it's allowing in. And I think this is where, you know, countries like the United States need to lean on Egypt and UNHCR to ask the Egyptian authorities to allow the Sudanese to come in. But that is not enough.
He added that donor countries must increase humanitarian funding to Egypt if they expect the country to begin taking refugees again. Other Sudanese neighbours, including Libya and Central African Republic, have their own security problems, and few are seeking refuge in either country. Fleeing to Eritrea on Sudan's eastern border would be an even worse choice for those seeking to escape the war, according to Eritrea Focus, a UK-based human rights group. The government is known as one of the most authoritarian and isolated regimes in the world, sometimes referred to as the North Korea of Africa. Habte Hargos is chairman of Eritrea Focus.
And indeed, the president has said that the Sudanese people are welcome to come to Eritrea. How many Sudanese have actually taken that offer is unknown. And why would anybody one sick refugee in Eritrea?
As international aid groups are not active in Eritrea, it's unclear whether any Sudanese refugees have arrived in the country. But even for those who have managed to escape, like Bokra Hassan Abdallah, who recently arrived in Chad, the difficulties do not end. She says she was forced to abandon her home because of attacks by Arab militias, adding that her current circumstances, living in a makeshift shelter on the edge of town as a result of her displacement. She says she had to leave Sudan without her identity documents. Lacking identity documents can make it hard for the displaced to register as refugees in Chad, in turn making it difficult to obtain support. As options for where to flee narrow, the number of internally displaced in Sudan is approaching 4 million, almost four times the number of refugees. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Adre, Chad.
I have to make some confession here. I love beans, and a campaign to double beans consumption for more sustainable diets and food systems will focus on Kenyan consumers and producers in a pilot effort for East Africa. Kenya will be the focus country in Africa for a global campaign to double bean consumption by 2028 to improve the health and sustainability of diets. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Beans is how the name of a coalition of more than 60 non-profit organizations, companies and research institutes has set its eye on Kenya, pushing for a 100% increase in the consumption of beans and other foods classified as pulses. Jean-Claude Rubiego is the head of the Pan-African Bean Research Alliance, an organization that pushes for beans as a source of food and income for the continent. He says the first step is to help farmers grow more beans.
I think what is needed is you can double the consumption. First of all, you need to double the production. Because if we don't have enough, like in Kenya, there are many people, almost maybe half, who like to eat beans daily and then even at each meal. But the availability is it's a minimum. So we need to increase the productivity. We need to see how we reduce the cost to the consumer. At the same time, also incentivize the farmer by with the better varieties, better agronomic practices, so that they can increase production and productivity.
Climate change has affected bean farming just as it has impacted other crops. Unpredictable weather patterns have made it challenging for farmers to cultivate beans and get good harvests. Experts say low awareness among farmers about utilizing the proper seeds varieties for their specific local conditions has led to reduced yields. The presence of pests and diseases has also played a role in declining bean production. Rubiogo says a reduction of planting and harvesting time can help alleviate the farmers' hunger and poverty.
Because for now we have a variety going up to 65 days, 70 days. 80 days, that is shorter than any other crop, food crop. So you can see when it's short, it allows the farmers to get cash because it reduces the cash hunger period. It also reduces the hunger period in the farms, in the families as well, so that people can get food in short periods, 70 days. Can you imagine? That means you can grow several season here if we invest in water management.
Experts are also working on beans that can take less cooking time, saving families energy and time, despite not producing enough beans. According to the Global Diet Quality Project, half of Kenyans eat pulses daily. Paul Newnham is the head of the Sustainable Development Goal 2 Advocacy Hub, which coordinates the Beans Is How campaign.
Beans are something that is you find in all different cultures around the world. So you'll find traditions that have used beans right back from indigenous cultures and all different types of cuisine. Beans are also relatively, compared to many other foods, quite affordable. Beans also are super, super nutritious. So they have not only protein, they have fiber, they have lots of micro and macronutrients. And they also are great for the soil.
Newnham says Beans Is How has developed a roadmap to increase the production and consumption of beans.
So the first is to influence and activate a community of bean stakeholders champions and influencers. And this is bean producers, retail, champions, chefs, young people, social media influencers, to really make beans visible, accessible and desirable. And then at the same time, to build an understanding amongst decision makers as to the value of beans in tackling their policy agenda, to ensure and inspire the public to cook, eat and grow more beans.
Beans is how we'll be featured at the Africa Food System Forum due to take place in Tanzania next week. Bean Advocates will host a market stall there, demonstrating ways to cook the food. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, African countries are condemning the military takeover in Gabon. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Nigeria has joined a growing number of nations criticizing the latest coup in Gabon. The Nigerian president and chair of regional bloc ECOWAS says he's working with the world leaders and African Union to resolve the political crisis. But some experts warn the failure of democratically elected leaders in Africa to provide good governance and deliver life's basic needs could spark more coups in the coming months. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigerian presidential spokesman Ajuri Ingelali says President Bola Tinubu is monitoring the development in Gabon very closely and with deep concern. Ngelali says Tinubu is also worried about the seeming, quote, autocratic contagion, end quote, spreading in Africa and is working with other heads of state in Africa to fix it. Senior military men on Wednesday ousted Gabonese leader Ali Bongo Ondimba shortly after he was declared the winner of last week's controversial presidential polls. He is now under house arrest. In a video on social media, Bongo is seen asking his allies to, quote, make some noise about his removal. The junta also annulled the elections, dissolved state institutions, and closed the country's borders. Ngelali spoke to journalists in Abuja.
Power belongs in the hands of Africa's great people and not in the barrel of a loaded gun. The president affirms that the rule of law and a faithful recourse to constitutional resolutions and instruments of electoral dispute resolution must not at any time be allowed to perish from our great continent.
Gabon's coup d'etat is the eighth in Africa since August 2020 and comes 1 month after a military standoff in Niger that regional bloc ECOWAS, chaired by Tinubu, is struggling to resolve. The latest coup, which the African Union also condemned, raises concerns about the fading of the rule of law in Africa. Coups are becoming more rampant because African leaders have failed to deliver quality democratic leadership, says Rotimi Olawale, an Abuja-based political affairs analyst.
While ECOWAS has a standing reaction to coups on the continent, what the body needs to do beyond response to coup is also to sort of subject the democratic credentials of its member state to a peer review mechanism. If democracy is not working for the people, they will seek alternative means of governance that will deliver the goods for them. And many democracies on the African continent is not delivering the goods.
Emmanuel Njoku, Director of Democracy and Governance at Connected Development, a non-profit civil society group based in Abuja, says there could be more coups in the coming months.
Democracy globally is being threatened, but for Africa in particular, yeah, the kind of democracy we see in Africa, everywhere you see dictatorial democrats in power, I'm not very surprised that these things are happening today. I don't think this is the end to it. We should be expecting more.
In 2009, Ali Bongo took over the reins of power from his father, who had ruled the country for 42 years before his death. Bongo also amended the country's constitution to allow him a third term in office. On Wednesday, hundreds of people marched in Gabon's capital, Libreville, celebrating the coup and saying they had been liberated from Bongo's dynasty. Njoku had this to say in response.
This is a country that is ready for this, and yet the people are so poor. And if you look at it realistically, is a celebration for the people of Gabon, having one family, you know, in the hem of our tail for so long. And you understand that even this president is already, you know, preparing the son to take over from him whenever he gets old.
Amid global condemnation, Gabon's hunter named General Brice Nguema as the country's transitional leader. The French news agency reports he will be sworn in on Monday. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
A 2023 study found that in 2001, almost 2 billion people around the world were affected by anemia, a condition in which red blood cell concentration is lower than usual. It also found that anemia was especially prevalent in West and Central Africa. From Nairobi, Kenya, Muhammad Yusuf reports on the scope of the problem in Africa and the ways it can be reversed.
Miriam Keita and Sylvia Anyango have anemia, a condition that affects one in four people worldwide. According to the World Health Organization, women are considered anemic when their red blood cell concentration falls below 12 grams per deciliter and men below 13 grams per deciliter. Keita and Anyango partly blame their anemia on pregnancy. Anyango says she thinks she got anemia because she got pregnant again soon after giving birth and cannot afford healthy foods. Keita says she that can't get her blood level to the required minimum without vegetables, and that giving birth will put her at a disadvantage. According to health experts, anemia during pregnancy is linked to increased rates of preterm labor, postpartum hemorrhage, low birth rate, stillbirth, and infections in both child and mother. Symptoms of anemia include shortness of breath, dizziness, and fatigue. Doctors say a key cause of anemia is lack of food containing iron, a mineral the body needs for growth and development. Key sources of iron include red meat, poultry, fish and eggs. Samira Nasir is a nutritionist with German Doctors, an international NGO that offers medical services.
What I've been witnessing is the increase in iron deficiency anemia, and the most significant contributing factor is household food insecurity. So many of our patients are unable to afford iron-rich foods or basically food at all. They always end up skipping meals to survive or reducing the quantity of food to be consumed or the quality of food.
A 2023 study by the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation found that the primary causes of anemia in 2021 was insufficient dietary iron intake. Iron deficiency accounted for two-thirds of all cases of anemia, affecting 825 million women and 444 million men worldwide. According to the study, sub-Saharan Africa bore the greatest burden of anemia, and countries like Mali, Togo and Zambia had a more than 50% prevalence. Will Gardner, IHME researcher and lead author of the study, says besides lack of iron, causes of anemia in the region include malaria, HIV and blood disorders.
Some of the largest drivers in these regions include infections such as malaria and other neglected tropical diseases. You see a larger driver in Zambia of HIV compared to some other countries. And then the standard drivers that are kind of consistent among other countries, including iron deficiency, hemoglobinopathies, and other blood disorders.
Josphat Njoroge lectures midwifery and nursing at Kenya's Amref International University. He says anemia can be treated with better nutrition.
So once this is detected, we start by introducing iron-rich foods to this person. We can also introduce iron supplements. This has been the mainstay of which the government is also putting much emphasis on this. If this anemia is extreme or severe, we can do blood transfusion, where we now have to supplement whatever the blood volume that the patient already has.
The World Health Organization aims to reduce the prevalence of anemia among women of reproductive age to at least 50% of 2012 levels by year 2030. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
We love to hear your remarks on issues in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Take it away, Nabil.
Thank you, John. Many of you wrote to us this week about news and events we covered on this broadcast. We begin with this voice note.
Hello, VOA. This is Yaba from Uganda. So I know our government is not really serious about its people because you can't give 15,000 to each member. You know, while civil servants are gone months without paying their salaries. Really, does that make sense? Even one of the honorables was failing to answer some questions. Really, they don't love their people. So what they only love is their money than people. And you people are talking about election next year. So how are we going for the election with all the crisis? How comes you give 15,000 to each member of parliament, just a medical allowance, while people are there struggling to put food on table for their kids, going months without paying their salaries? Really, that's very bad. That's very bad.
Hello, John and Bill. This is Mal Adamal in Seattle, Washington. South Sudan basketball team has shown the world that we can also do well in sports. Beating China, to me, was the biggest achievement in sport history. So we lost to incredible Serbian team. Then, next time, we shall try our best. Thanks.
Robert Nyombe in Kakamega County in Western Kenya says, hello, VOA. Allow me to take this time to thank the South Sudan national basketball team, the Bright Stars, for their outstanding performance at the FIBA World Cup. Their achievements have raised our national pride to new heights, and we hope they will continue to excel in the future. Martin Manuel Wugon in Djibouti says, hello, VOA. Kindly convey my congratulations to the newly appointed Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, Ambassador James Pitia Morgan, a diplomat equal to the task. Meanwhile, allow me to congratulate former Acting Foreign Affairs Minister, Honorable Deng Dao Malek, who was relieved of his duties by presidential decree yesterday and replaced with the top diplomat, Dr. James Pitia Morgan. Dr. Morgan has served South Sudan with distinguished sacrifices to the motherland. This listener says, hello, South Sudan in Focus. I am Jacob Dior Machueng from Ural in Lake State. I am the happiest man on earth because of the performances of our basketball team, the Bright Stars. They are our heroes and champions, and I also call them peacemakers as they unite our divided country like no one else. I wish basketball could be played every month. Samu Remo in Yei says, hi, John Tanzen and Nabil Biagio. I am disappointed by the ongoing crisis in African countries. I wish the international community would participate in constitution-making efforts to guide the lives of people living in African countries. Thanks. Aligo Joel says, hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. I appreciate your program for providing a platform for listeners to share their views across the nation. I'm Aligo Joel in Mvepe Refugee Settlement in Uganda. He goes on to say, milk and honey exist together, regardless of their color differences. Why do South Sudanese leaders fail to apply the knowledge they have gained from abroad? Instead, we witness division based on tribalism, differences in color, and a lack of a spirit of togetherness.
Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the Voice of America or this program. Keep your comments brief and we shall sample them every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Friday, September 1st. We now take you to Kisumu City for a test of Tony Nyadondo's music. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Kayla William, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.